Okay. Today is February 3rd, the 14th of Shvat, right? Tomorrow's Tu B'Shvat. And we are going to be finishing Perek Vav of Shmuel Aleph. Okay, so last week we did the beginning of Perek Vav, and we talked about the Plishtim and how we compared it to Avraham and Gidon. And hi Ruth. We just started. And the main point of last week was to show through the perspective of the Plishtim and their interactions with the Aron and their experiences with the Aron and what the Aron did while it was in their territory, that they never really got it. They continue to just see Hashem as one of a pantheon of gods. And even when they send out the Aron in this parak back to Bnei Israel, and they see, they do this little test, we'll talk about it, and they say, and we'll see if it's really their God or just a coincidence. Like, they're not fully convinced of this. So that's where we left off last time. So we're going to start with Perek Zayin. The beginning of the Perek is them getting together with all their wise men and figuring out what to do. And they make these gold models of their hemorrhoids or whatever they were, and the mice and however they were involved in the hemorrhoids. It's not something you really want to dwell on. And they made these gold models of them, and they placed them in... they placed them next to the Aron in this wagon that they created that these cows would then take back to Beit Shemesh, to Israel. And then we compared with the parshas of 2 weeks ago of the Egyptians and Paro and heavy hearts and how this all started. Pasuk Zayin. They take wood and they make a new cart, and then they take 2 milk cows, meaning they're cows that are nursing their young, who have never worked before, so they have no experience with leading a cart, and they're going to hitch the cows to the cart. And then, if you look at the Hebrew at the end of Pasuk Zayin, V'hashevotam b'neihem mi'achareihem habaita. So the nursing cows are going to be facing one direction, to go in a certain direction, but they're going to send their babies, the calves, in another direction. So they're making, and these are cows that have never pulled a wagon before in their lives, so they're trying to set it up so it's the most impossible situation. It's almost as if they're trying to deny the existence of God, and they're setting up this thing so that it, in their eyes, will be impossible for this to occur. Okay, in Pasuk Chet, Ulekachtam et Aron Hashem unatatam oto el ha'agala, and they're going to take the Aron of Hashem, and again, we've spoken about this development of how they refer to the Aron, and as much as they haven't gotten it, that God is the one and only God, they at least get it somewhat with Aron Hashem, that this is, there's something special about this God as opposed to the other gods. Unatatam oto el ha'agala, they're going to put it on this wagon, but klei hazahav asher hashevotam lo asham tasimu be'argaz mitzido, and these golden things that they made. They are doing it, and look carefully here. They, from their perspective, these golden things are in their language an asham, which is a offering. A guilt offering. We use the same language, right? To Hashem. We also have an asham, a guilt offering. So keep that in mind, that that's what they're considering these things, and they're placing it in a box on the side of the Aron. So in this wagon is the Aron, and then this box that has all these golden things. Okay? And Vishilach Tamoto Vehalach. And they sent them off and they went. Pasuk Tet. Uritam et derech gvulo. And they saw. And you will see if it goes up on the way to its boundary, meaning where they want it to go, Yala Beit Shemesh, towards that it'll go up to Beit Shemesh, Hu asalanu et hara'a hagadol hazot. Then, indeed, this Aaron is what brought us all these evil things that smote all of our people. Vimlo, and if it doesn't go where we're directing it right now in this impossible situation, viadanu ki lo yadon nagabanu mikrehu hayalanu, then we will know that it wasn't it which touched us, which plagued us, and it was purely a coincidence that happened to us. Okay, so imagine they're still not fully convinced. And with all the references to Egypt, it would be like the Egyptians thinking of some fantastical plan to see whether or not it was indeed God that did all the 10 plagues or it was some coincidence, which is sort of what some people are out to prove when they try to prove all the scientific evidence of the 10 plagues. Like, it's a divine coincidence in a sense. Okay, so they've set up this situation and it's a test and they're going to see whether it was really the Aaron that caused all this or just a coincidence. Good. V'yasu anashim kein. The people did this. This was all the advice of all their experts and everything. V'ikru shtei parot alot. V'yasrum ba'agala. So they took two cows that are milking and hitched them to the cart. V'yasrum, you guys know that word from matirasurim. So they hitched them. V'et b'nehem kalubabait. And their children, they closed up in the house. Yud Aleph, v'yasimu et aron Hashem el ha'agala. Then they placed the aron on the cart. V'et haragaz, and the box. V'et achberei hazahav, and the golden whatever they are. V'et salmeit chorehem, the mice and their hemorrhoids. Again, I'm not going to dwell on that. Okay, yud vet, v'yisharna haparot baderach al derech beit shemesh b'misila achat. Okay, so v'yisharna you can take in two ways. We'll look at Rashi. We'll go with the more simple meaning first. That from the word yashar, so the cows went on this straight path to Beit Shemesh. In one path, halchu, they went. Haloch v'ga'o v'lo saru yamin u'smol. They didn't turn left or right. They didn't veer from their way to Beit Shemesh. I think the reason why there are two explanations for Yashar, and again, I'm horrible at geography, but I think the way to Beit Shemesh was not so straight, so it doesn't make sense necessarily to say it straight, so we'll see in a little bit what Rashi says. V'sarnei plishtim hochim acharehem, and these officers of the plishtim, they went after it, okay? So they didn't just watch it from a distance, they went after it. Al gvul Beit Shemesh, to the border of Beit Shemesh. Okay, so what's happening in Beit Shemesh? Yud Gimel. Beit Shemesh kotzrim k'tzir chitim. Beit Shemesh was in the midst of their wheat harvest. Be'emek, in the valley. Ve'yis'u et einehem, and they lifted up their eyes. Ve'yir'u et aron, ve'yismechu lerot. And they saw the aron, and they were very happy to see it. It doesn't even say to see it. It just says to see. Okay. Yedalin. Ve'agala ba alste Yehoshua beit Hashemshi. So the cart came to the field of Yehoshua from Beit Shemesh, v'tamod sham, and that's where the cows stopped. V'sham evin gedola, and there was this big stone. And just remember that it's evin gedola. V'yivaku et atzei agala. So what did the people of Beit Shemesh do? They cut up the cart, the wood. V'et haparot halu ola l'Hashem, and they used the cows that the plishtim had hooked up to the cart as a sacrifice, an ola, so it's a completely burnt up sacrifice to God. Okay, tetvav ve'alevi'im horidu et aron Hashem, and the Levim brought down the aron of Hashem, so that's good. It's good protocol that the Levim were doing it. Ve'et ha'argaz asher ito, and the box that was with it, asher bo klei zahav, in which the golden vessels had been placed. Ve'yisimu el ha'evan, and they hagedola, and they placed those things on the big stone, where they had offered up the cows using the wood from the cart as the wood to burn it. V'anshei Beit Shemesh halu olot. The people of Beit Shemesh brought more sacrifices, v'yizbechu zvachim. So they brought both the completely burnt up sacrifices, and also zvachim are usually associated with the volunteer korbanot that we bring in times of Thanksgiving, where part of it is burnt and part of it goes to the Kohanim and part of it is for the people who brought it. Bayom Hahul Hashem, on that day Hashem. So this is a great festival. The Aaron is back It's been in captivity from the first pasuk in this parak that we didn't read together for 7 months. We're going to talk about that in a little. And they have this huge barbecue, essentially, with korbanot. V'chamisha sarnei plishtim ra'u. And the five officers of the plishtim saw. V'yashuv ve'akron bayom ha'hu. And then they went back to Ekron on that day. Okay, so at the end of this year, we're going to come back and sort of put these pieces together of why this information is in this order. But basically, to summarize, they decide how they're going to return it. They create what they think is an impossible situation because they don't want to admit to or accept the existence of God. But indeed, these milk cows miraculously ignore their children. And even though they've never been hitched up to anything, they take this cart and they go straight to Beit Shemesh against all odds, literally. And when the people of Beit Shemesh, who are in the midst of their wheat harvest, see this, they're happy, and they put everything on this great stone, and they have all these great sacrifices. And the people of the officers of the plishtim see all this, and then they leave. So what happens after this? Yud Zayin then enumerates what exactly the plishtim brought. So ve'elet chorei hazahav asher heshiva plishtim asham lashem. So these are the golden hemorrhoids that the plishtim had sent back, and again the language of asham lashem as this guilt offering to God. La'ashdod echad, la'aza echad, la'ashkelon echad, la'gat echad, la'akron echad. So each of these places where the Aron was, they each had one. And this again, Rabbi Shulman from St. Louis has a very interesting theory on this odd language of this pasuk that we'll get to later when we discuss the whole thing. Okay, Yudchet ve'achbarei hazahav mispar kol arei plishtim l'chameshet hasaranim me'ir mivtzar ve'ad kofer haparazi ve'ad, and look at this word, it says avel hagadola. Does everyone see that? I forgot to check if my printing would have said if there was a Korean ketiv. Okay. Asher enichu alea ve'et aron Hashem ad hayom hazeh b'stei Yoshua beit HaShimshi. So, the golden mice were according to the number of the cities of the plishtim, which belonged to the five lords or officers. From fortified city to open village, there must be some sort of intertextual dialogue here with Megillat Esther. I don't know what it is. And even to the great stone, but here's already a hint that things are turning in a totally different, surprising direction than you would expect at this point, because it doesn't say Evan or Aven, it says Avel, which is mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, okay? And we're going to see that word come up again, okay? That they had placed, upon which they had placed the Ark, the Aron of Hashem. Until this day, it's this big stone is still in the field of Yoshua, the Beit Shemeshite. Okay, now look what happens. Vayach ba'anshei Beit Shemesh, ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem, vayach ba'am shiv'im ish, chamishim alef ish, v'yit'ablu ha'am ki hika Hashem ba'am makah gedola. So, the people of Beit Shemesh were struck because they saw, and we're going to discuss this also, it says in the Aron. Usually when there are verbs in Hebrew that mean to see or look at, where we use what's about, in, to, what are those called?
Preposition.
Yes, preposition. Thank you. Where we use the preposition in, like when you watch television in Hebrew, you say lehista kal beh. Right, Ruth?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are verbs where that preposition is added. It's one of my most difficult things in learning Hebrew is learning when you need a preposition and which preposition you need with certain verbs. But lirot is usually not one. Lirot usually just takes a direct object without a preposition. So this is an unusual phrase. Ki ra'u beh ba'aron Hashem.
You usually have et.
Right. Meaning it's just a direct object, no prepositional phrase. The word et means, as I learned in my Hebrew class, da-da-da-da, direct object. Okay, so that's odd language we're going to discuss. Vayach ba'am, and they smote in the nation 70 men, 50,000. This is also expressed strangely. is it 50,000, 70, or is there some dividing up of 70 and 50? We're going to talk about that. Men, and here, vayit ablu, as if you didn't get the hint before when we called the stone, the Evan, and Evel. Here, they mourned, the entire nation mourned, they were in mourning, because Hashem had smote the nation such a great smiting. How do they translate it here? Struck a great blow upon the people. Pasuk kaf, vayomru anshei Beit Shemesh, the people said, Mi yuchal la'amod lifnei Hashem Elokim HaKadosh Hazeh, who can stand before God, this great holy God? Ve'al mi ya'aleh mi'aleinu, and who, to whom will it go up from upon us? Who can we give this ark to? Ve'yishlechu malachim al yoshvei Kiryat Yarim, and they sent messengers to Kiryat Yarim, lemar heshivu plishim at Aron Hashem, the plishim have returned the Aron of God, redu halu oto aleichem, you guys come down and bring it up to you. Okay, so if you look at your sheet, you'll see that at the end of Pasuk Chaf, there is a Samech. At the end of Pasuk Chaf Aleph, there is no Samech or Pei. So again, this is the Christians dividing this in an odd way. So we're going to get to Kiryat Yarim probably next week. We're not going to talk about it this week, why they were worthy of the Ark and not Beit Shemesh. Okay, so the first thing that I want to talk about here is the 7 months. Why 7 months? And you don't have it on your sheet. I apologize because I just remembered morning about this. The very first pasuk from the parak. And it was that the Aaron was in the field of the plishtim for 7 months. So there is a midrash in a very surprising place in Bereshit that relates pasuk kaf aleph, parak kaf aleph of Bereshit with our parak in Shmuel. So I'll just read you the pasukim that it's based on. Vayikach Avraham. I'll start before that. So this is Perek Aleph, and it is a dialogue, an encounter between Avram and Avimelech. And who's Avimelech? Where does he live? He's in the Plishtim area, okay? So he's like the ancestor to our guys here who kidnapped the Ark. So Avimelech wants Avram to swear to him that his grandchildren and great-grandchildren, that he'll do a chesed with them, and he will allow them to stay in this land. And Avram says, I swear. And then Avram tells Avimelech about the wells that his people keep closing up, and Avimelech says, I didn't know, it's not going to happen again. And then Kaf Zayin, in Perek Kaf Aleph, V'ikach Avram son uvakar, v'yiten l'Avimelech, v'yichretu shnehem brit. Avram takes sheep and cattle, and he gives it to Avimelech, and they establish a covenant between the two of them. Kafchet vayatsev Avram et sheva kivsot hatzon levad hen. And Avram placed the 7 sheep by themselves. And this is why it's originally called Be'er Sheva, because this happened in Be'er Sheva. The meaning of the name changes with Yitzchak, but here it's because of these 7 sheep. Now the Midrash tells us, so the Midrash says, V'yikach Avram tzon ubakar v'yiten l'Avimelech, v'yomer Avimelech l'Avram ma'hena sheva kvasot. So Avimelech says, but that's the next pasuk, what are these 7 sheep that you place to the side? Pasuk lamed v'yomer, ki et sheva kvasot tikach miyadi ba'avur tiyali le'eda, ki chafarti et ha-be'er hazot. So this is all about the wells again, that he wants a promise that these wells belong to him, and he places these 7 sheep as indication of that. Al-Kain Karala Makomahu Be'er Sheva. And that's why they call the place Be'er Sheva, because of these 7 sheep. Okay. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says to Avram, this is from Bereshit Rabbah, Parsha Nun Dalad. Ata natata sheva kvasot bli ritzoni. You gave 7 sheep without my will, against my will. Meaning, because what's the essence of this promise? It's not just about the wells. It's about not kicking Avimelech out of this land, which essentially is, Hashem didn't want him to do this. Okay? Chayecha keneged kain horgim mibanecha shivat tzadikim. So the first thing he says, sorry. Shavak v'sobli v'tani. Chayecha she'ani mashe b'simchat banecha shavadorot. by your life, I will delay the happiness of your children 7 generations. And then he gives a whole bunch of reasons. I'm going to have 7 righteous people from your children killed. Chofni, Pinchas, going back to our story. Vishimshon, Vishaul, and his 3 sons. You gave 7 sheep without my will. Corresponding to this, there will be 7 dwelling places of God that will be destroyed. Ohel Moed, Gilgal, Nov, Giv'on, Shiloh, Ubeit Olamim Tarin, and the 2 Beit HaMikdashes. And the last one, I think. Yes, the last one. You gave 7 sheep without my will. My Aaron will be in the field of the Plishtim for 7 months. Okay? So this kidnapping, this holding on to of the Aaron for 7 months by the Plishtim corresponds directly to this original brit that Avraham made that Hashem didn't want him to, using, symbolized by 7 sheep. Okay. So that's the midrash of that. Okay, so now we're going to look at a few of the Rashis. So this first one is Vayisharna, where we translate in the simple meaning that it went straight. Okay, so Rashi says, Hare teva zo androgynos. So this is a grammatical hermaphrodite. So it meaning it has the yod of the masculine and the nun hey at the end of the feminine. Milmed she'af havladot hayu omrim shira roni roni hashitav hit nofafichule. This teaches us that the young, hence masculine, recited a song. Sing aloud, sing along, O ark of acacia wood. Exalt yourself with greatness of your splendor, you who are girded with golden embroidery, and you who are praised with the scroll of the palace, Moshe's scroll, and lauded with choice ornaments. So this is from the Gemara. So Vayisharna does not mean they went straight. It means they sang. Everyone was singing. Or the cows actually were singing, I think. Not sure. Okay. Ulefi pshuto, but according to the simple meaning, Vayisharna lashon yashar, derech hashar hayu halchot. They were going straight. Okay, next Rashi.
So they sang all the way to Beit Shemesh.
Yeah, exactly.
The cows were singing.
Yes. Is there an expression like that? Till the cows come home? I don't know. Okay, something about singing also. Okay, so now we're skipping down to Pasuk Yud Gimel. So, V'yismachu l'rot. They were happy to see. So, what were they happy? Rashi says, Hayu mistaklin. So they were gazing to see how it came along. They recognized the miracle of how it arrived. And out of their joy, they behaved with levity. That they weren't gazing upon it, instead of lirot, out of fear or awe, and with respect. Okay, so there was something about this simcha. That was a little light. We're going to read some other mefarshim that explain why, how we can understand this simcha as being light-headed, as opposed to, it makes sense they'd be happy. Why would that be a bad thing, right? Okay, now Rashi on Shivim Vish, Chamishim Aleph Ish. So before we read that Rashi, just look below the English, where it says Beit Shemesh, Hebrew Beit Shemesh in the Greek. This is from Wikipedia. And I just took the current population of Beit Shemesh is 80,600 people. So here we're saying, if you read this, it's very difficult to understand how to read it. But if you wanted to read it as 50,070 people dying, that would seemingly be impossible. This is from Rabbi Shulman, that there's only 80,600 people in Beit Shemesh as of 2010. So really, that many thousand, you know, to have that, it'd be decimating the entire city. There'd be no one left if really that many people died, if there were even that many people there to begin with in that time. Okay, so how does Rashi interpret it? Shivim ish, chamishim elef ish, tirgem Yonatan. So Yonatan ben Uziel, who translated into Aramaic, he's very different than Targum Onklus, because Targum Onklus is almost word for word, whereas Targum Yonatan includes halachot and midrashim in his translation. Also, Targum Onklus is only on Chumash. Targum Yonatan's on both Chumash and Navi. V'katel v'sabe ama. He killed the elders of the people, Shivim Gavra, who were 70 men. U'bekahala chamishim alfei Gavra. And of the community, 50,000 men. So he interprets it that indeed 50,070 people died. But Verabotenu Amru, the rabbi said, Shivim Ish, Shekol Chad Haya Shakul Kechamishim Aleph. No, only 70 men were killed, but these 70 men were so awesome that each one of them was as equal to 50,000. Oh, or possibly it could be Chamishim Aleph Ish. There were actually 50,000 people killed, Shekol Chad Shakul Kechivim Sanhedrin, that each one of those was equal to the level of the 70 people on the Sanhedrin. Okay, so Rav Amnon Bazak on the VBM has a different theory. He says you could read the pasuk in a parallel structure. Okay, so here's his parallel structure from the VBM website. He struck of the men of Beit Shemesh because they had gazed upon the ark. So that corresponds to, in the second clause of the verse, 70 men. So that's how many he struck. And then the second clause of the first part, even he struck the people, corresponds to 50,000 men. So if you count up all the people who have died thus far in this war with the Plishtim from all of Eretz Yisrael, you will get to around 50,000. So it wasn't that 50,000 people died in this one incident in Beit Shemesh. In this one incident in Beit Shemesh, 70 people died. But from the beginning of this whole war, where Hophni and Pinchas were killed and Eli dies, it equals around 50,000. Okay, and just to read what he writes, that's translated on the VBM. According to this proposal, the verse is written in the form of ABAB, parallel structure, and it means to say that of the men of Beit Shemesh, 70 people died, and of the people of Israel as a whole, 50,000 died. If we understand the verse in this matter, it might also be suggested that the high number of casualties does not relate to this specific incident, in which presumably far fewer people participated. It is much more reasonable to assume that this number includes the 34,000 people who died in chapter 4, so that in this specific incident, only 16,000 people died. Okay. So if you add up to 50, that means 16,000 people would have died here at Beit Shemesh and not 50,000. Okay, we're going to skip this Radak because it repeats a lot of what was mentioned in the Gemara. Okay. I think Malbim also doesn't add anything new. Okay, so the Gemara that the Radak mentions, that's what we're going to do, the Gemara. So this is from Masechet Sota, Daf Lamed Hei Amud Aleph. Vayach be'anshe Beit Shemesh ki ra'u be'aron. So from our pasuk, he struck the men of Beit Shemesh because they gazed upon the Aron. Mishum de'ra'u yach elokim. Just because they saw it, God smote them. Rabbi Abahu ve'Rabbi Elazar. So we're going to have two opinions. I think they're, Chad Amar, one of them says, Kotzrim u'mishtachavim hayu. They were harvesting and bowing and bowed. V'chadamar mili nami amor. One of them said, they also spoke words. Man amrin de'imrait mine ata alaych de'ipaist. Sorry, hard Aramaic words. Who angered you when you became angry? And who came now to appease you? Okay, so if you go to page 5, I apologize, it's not in order. Actually, I want to read the other sources. That's why I put it in this order before we read the next one. And we'll read this explanation of all of them. Okay, so there's something about being in the midst of the harvest. And it doesn't say that they stopped harvesting, basically, is the issue here. Because you would think it would say they were harvesting, they lifted up their eyes, they saw the ark, and they stopped harvesting and ran out to celebrate the return of the ark, right? But it doesn't say that. So it's this explanation, and again, this is from Rav Amnon Bazak's article, is going to compare it to one other incident where we see a similar situation. So this is from Parshat Mishpatim. We're going to read next week. Shmot Perek Kaf Dalet. Rabbi Menachem Liptag likes to point out that in this chapter 24 of Shmot is when we see Na'asa v'Nishma, the famous tours that it's a whole Ein Mukdama Me'ochar v'Torah. There's no chronological order in the Torah. We usually understand Naseh v'Nishma is coming before the giving of the Torah, but really it's not until chapter 24, but really Rashi says it actually happened before. Anyway, that pasuk of Naseh v'Nishma is chapter 24, verse 7. So it's 24-7. Just a funny little Naseh v'Nishma, 24-7. Okay. Anyway, so that's in the context of this parak of 24. So it says, Ve'el etzilei b'nei Yisrael lo shalach yado. Upon the nobles of the children of Israel, he did not lay his hand. Ve'yechazu et elokim ve'yochlu v'yishtu. And they perceived God. They saw God. It translates here, perceived. The word is more saw. But seeing in a vision. And they ate and they drank. Okay, so here we have the people of Beit Shemesh. I mean, they're, in our case, we have the people of Beit Shemesh harvesting. So they're in the midst of an activity. And here comes the Aaron, and they don't seem to stop anything. Here, with the Aseret HaDibrot, the ultimate revelation of Hashem, we have the nobles eating and drinking, and they're perceiving God, but they don't stop eating, and they're just sitting, eating and drinking. So Rashi says, who are these Atzilim, these nobles? He says they're Nadav and Avihu, and the elders. And then Lo Shalach Yado, why does it say that Hashem didn't kill them? Like, this is a happy time. This is revelation. What does it mean Hashem didn't kill him? Michal Shayu Ruim Lihishaleach Behem Yad, because they deserved. Hashem should have at this point laid a hand on them. Okay? And Vechazu et Elokim, how did they perceive God? Hayimas Taklimbo Belev Gas. They were gazing at him with this, like, rude heart. It says levity here. Mitoch Achila Vishtia, while they were eating and drinking. That's what the Midrash says. Okay. So then let's read this in English from Rav Bazak. According to the first opinion, the derision expresses itself in the fact that despite their joy, they continue to harvest. So that's the first opinion of the Gemara. This is similar to the sin committed at Mount Sinai, and upon the nobles of the children of Israel, he laid not his hand, and they beheld God, and they did eat and drink. As explained by Rashi, they peered at him intimately amidst eating and drinking. This direction may be developed in light of the correspondence between additional points in the two stories. First, already with respect to the sin, both stories talk about seeing God. They gazed upon the Ark of God, and they beheld God. Second, both stories speak of a punishment in relation to 70 people. At Mount Sinai, it says, and upon the nobles of the children of Israel, he laid not his hand. And as Rashi explains there, these are Nadav and Avihu and the elders. He laid not his hand. This implies that they well deserved that God should stretch forth his hand against them. In our chapter as well, a blow is mentioned against 70 men, 50,000 men, an expression that the sages interpret as referring to the Sanhedrin. It should be further noted that Nadav and Avihu, Aaron's two eldest sons, participate in this sin, and the story in our chapter ends with, and again, this is the weird division of the Christians, because we didn't see this pasuk. This is you see it's chapter 7, verse 1. And they brought it into the house of Avinadav on the hill, and they sanctified Eleazar, his son, to keep the Ark of Hashem. The name Avinadav brings to mind Nadav and Avihu, and the sanctification of Eleazar, the namesake of Aaron's third son who becomes his chief deputy, seems to be a repair of the sin common to the Jews here and to Nadav and Avihu there, the lack of appropriate awe. I thought that was a really cool intertextual dialogue there with those names. Okay, so here's a couple. The next sources are the Rashbam referencing our story. So this is from Bamidbar, and it's Perek Dalet, and it's describing the job of the Kahati family, and they have a very dangerous job because they're in charge of carrying the Aaron, but the Levi'im can't touch any of the vessels or anything, because they're only Levi'im. The only people who can come in contact is the Kohen Gadol. So Al Tichru Rutu et Shevet Mishpachat HaKahati Mitoch HaLevi'im. Do not cut off the tribe of the families of the Kahati from among the Levites. And Rabbi Schaefer, in his share on these Prakim, actually mentions that if you look, I forgot where he said, that it seems that this family actually dies very young, a lot of people in this family, because probably from accidentally touching things that they shouldn't touch. V'zot asu lehem v'chayu. These are the things to do so that they live, v'lo yamutu, and they won't die. B'gishtam et kodesh ha-kadoshim. When they approach the most holy things, Aaron ubanav yavo v'samo otam ish ish al avodato ve'al masa'o. Aaron and his sons will go in and appoint them everyone to his service and to his burden. V'lo yavo olirot kivala et hakodesh umetu. And they shall not go in to see when the holy things are covered up, lest they die. So Rashbam there says, So Rashbam, first I should have put this with chapter 24 of Shemot. So when it's talking about the elders of Bnei Israel, that Hashem did not put his hand in, even though they saw the God of Israel, as it's written in our in the pasuk that we just read in Bamidbar, that that the holy things were covered up lest they die. V'chein ba'anshei Beit Shemesh. And this is all what happened exactly with the Beit Shemesh people, that they saw the Aron of Hashem. But with Moshe, with the burning bush, we found that he was too afraid to look, right? He covered his face at that time. So those are the two different types of reactions. Okay, Rashbam Kibbalat HaKodesh. Again, so this is in Bamidbar, because the Kodesh is hidden. Bala literally means to swallow. It's swallowed up in whatever's covering it. Kisha sotrim et hechal nigla. When the sanctuary is taken apart, it becomes revealed. V'im yiru yamutu. And if they were to see it, they would die. Kumo shematzinu ba'anshei Beit Shemesh. Like we find with the people of Beit Shemesh, ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem. That they saw with the Aaron of Hashem. Okay, so now we're going to read the Al Sheikh, and then hopefully it'll all be pulled together.
Can I just ask, they saw the Kelim or they saw the Aaron?
So it appears that when it says with the letter Bet, Ki Ra'u Be Aaron, that they actually looked inside the Aaron and saw everything. Okay?
So did the police team.
Yeah, but there are no expectations placed on the police team. You know, it's like the holier you are, the higher the expectations. And every Jew should know how to treat the Aaron. Okay, so Al-Sheikh...
That goes back to what you said about that being an unusual
proposition. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, so the Al-Sheikh, and then that'll take us to our conclusion. U'Beit Shemesh kotzrim k'tzir chitim be'emek v'yisu et eneham. So the Beit Shemesh was harvesting their wheat harvest in the valley, and they lifted up their eyes. Hine hoda'azo she'yu kotzrim chitim yir'el lebli tzorach. Why does the Navi need to tell us that they were harvesting their wheat? Ach, hine yesh merazal omrim. We have from our rabbis who say, and the Radak quotes it, be'omro vayach ba'anshei Beit Shemesh, that when it says, and they were the people of Beit Shemesh were smitten, ki ahavon haya shehistaklu be'aron. And you're right, I didn't read this, I skipped over this. The sin was, in the Gemara this is said, that they actually looked in the Aron. How could it have occurred to these people to look in the Aron? Everyone knows the dangers of looking into the Aron, and that is absolutely usher for everybody except for the Kohen Gadol. And it's possible that the reason it's telling us that it's the wheat harvest time is the intent to tell us that from this greatness of happiness, it takes away from the heart of the heads of the nation in order to go astray. And that's when it says the people of Beit Shemesh are harvesting wheat. Shehu simcha lebalei hasedot. This is going to be happiness to the owners of the field. Kama de'atamar, as it says in Yeshayahu, kisimchat bekatzir nitosef bahem od simcha. So this is a pasuk in Yeshayahu. I'm going to read you the English. Because you really see, so Yeshayahu, the pasuk says, you have multiplied the nation and increased the joy before you according to the joy in harvest. And as men rejoice when they divide and plunder. So they already had this joyousness from the harvest. And then seeing the Aron increased this joy on top of the joy of the harvest. And this created such a happiness that it became a light-hearted happiness, and they didn't have the appropriate kavod. Okay. So this happiness was that. So the last paragraph in the Al-Sheikh, and this is what's written below, Vayach chule kera'u ba'aron Hashem. And they were smitten because they saw in the Aron Hashem. Ve'lo ne'amar miyad v'yach ba'anshe shamash, beit shamash. But it doesn't say immediately after they saw the contents of the Aron that they were smitten. It didn't happen immediately. Ki'im achar sipur ha'kravat ola. Rather, it happened after the whole story of the sacrifices. V'sipur chazarat hasaranim limkomam u'min chatam. And after the story of the officers of the plishim going back to their place and their gifts. Remember, that was called an asham. Yitachen hora, possibly it's instructing, shelo ratza yitbarach hakotam al riyatam ad shehachu lehem sarnei plishim achar asota olah v'hasvachim. Perhaps it's telling us that Hashem did not want to smite the Jewish people until after the officers of the plishim had already left. Pen yaltsu haplishtim im hayuroim, lest the plishtim would be joyous if they would see the Jewish people being smitten. Pen yomru, lest they would say, ki kemavet ze, kein mavet ze, just like we died, they're also dying. Ki gam memit aron beYisrael, kasher metu beplishtim. Look, this aron also does destruction in Israel, just like it kills in Philistia, whatever you translate that as. Al kein achar amru v'yismachu lirot siper nyan hola al yitze agala mehaparot b'makom she'agala matzala manoach. And therefore, after it says that the people were happy, it continues on with all the korbanot in the place where the cows came to rest, and it doesn't tell you, Hashem doesn't smite the people of Beit Shemesh until after the plishim have left. Okay, now, I want to go back to the parak and tell you, and this is based on Rabbi Shulman, that not to add on to what the Al-Sheikh is saying, I don't think Rabbi Shulman quoted the Al-Sheikh, if you look at the wording, and just again, try to see this from the Plishtim perspective, and then how Hashem is seeing these events carried out by the Jewish people. So here the Plishtim have an asham. They have a guilt offering that they are offering to our God within the pantheon of all gods, right? They haven't recognized our God as the one and only. And Bnei Israel receive it, and from the perspective of the plishtim officers who are watching this all, it looks like the people of Beit Shemesh are taking their guilt offering, their asham, and placing it alongside their own offerings all together in an offering to Hashem. So it looks like these idolatrous objects are being offered up to Hashem in the same way their own offerings, and this is, in essence, the horrible thing that the people of Beit Shemesh are doing. And he even suggests, Rabbi Shulman, that when it's describing the offerings of the plishtim in this strange language, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Hashem, so ve'elet chorei hazahav asher heshivu plishtim asham la'ashem, you can almost hear them stating this as a poem, in a tribute to God. These are the golden hemorrhoids that the plishtim offered as a guilt offering to God. Le'ashdod echad, le'aza echad, le'ashkelon echad, le'gat echad, le'ekron echad. Rabbi Shulman suggests that this is almost a poem that they're saying. And from the plishtim perspective, they've made it. Like, their offerings are just as good as Jewish offerings in what's being brought up to Hashem on this great stone or great mourning, mourning, depending on how it's spelled. So this is the saddest part of how Beit Shemesh feels that Hashem would actually appreciate these gifts of the plishtim alongside their own gifts. And that is part of why so many people were smitten in this horrible act. So on the face value, it looks like they're just happy and they're offering up something. And even if they looked, how could that be that 50,000 people die? If you take it as 14,000, 15,000, still thousands of people are killed. But really, when you read between the lines of what's going on here and not only what's going on here, but knowing that the officers of the police team witnessed this, the acceptance of their offering, then you really see that it was a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, and you can understand more the reaction of Hashem in smiting the people of Beit Shemesh.
But But if it was a Chilul Hashem, then why wouldn't Hashem have wanted the Plishtim to see that they died for it?
Because he knew the Plishtim would have equated that to their own dying.
But then now they've got the idea that they're Korbanot, or that's the Hashem.
So who cares? Right? Like, their ideas weren't swayed when the Aron was actually in their territory. They're not going to be swayed. They're going to interpret it in the wrong way if they were to have seen Bnei Israel being killed.
But on the other hand, you say when the calves went straight, right. That's kind of, you know, as if they may have got the message.
Right, so. But again, they're still seeing it in the pantheon of their gods. This god just happens to be a little stronger.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a lost cause.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And this relates all the way back to Avraham Avinu making the brit with Avimelech of allowing his grandchildren and great-grandchildren to remain in the land.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all tied up together. Okay, thank you very much.